Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So if you're accused of a crime in the Bronx, you're more likely than in any other borough to walk away without being prosecuted. After a months-long investigation, WNYC reporter Elsa Chang revealed that the Bronx District Attorney Robert Johnson declines to prosecute more cases than any other borough's DA. And it apparently has to do with his longstanding policy that if a victim doesn't come forward within 24 hours, the charges get dropped or not pursued. To talk about these revelations and the implications for fighting crime in the Bronx is our own Elsa Chang. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
The numbers that you report are striking. The Bronx DA has had the highest decline to prosecute rate in the city for 13 of the last 16 years. In 2011, his office declined 23% of cases compared to 12% in Staten Island, which is the next highest, and it's much lower in the other boroughs. How come?
Well, there could be a variety of reasons, but what seems to be one of the main reasons is a unique policy that the Bronx District Attorney's Office has. And it's an internal guideline that prosecutors are told to follow, and it goes like this. When an arrest comes into the office, if the victim of the crime, if there is a victim, isn't interviewed within the first 24 hours after that arrest, the office will almost always drop the case. And they say that they're driven to have this policy because here in New York, a defendant has to be arraigned within 24 hours after his arrest. That's the usual guideline set by the courts.
And we're talking about misdemeanors, felonies, all kinds of crimes, or there are certain crimes that are less likely to be prosecuted in the Bronx than other places mostly?
The biggest category of crime that went unprosecuted because of a decline to prosecute was assault. Now, that makes the Bronx different from Manhattan and Brooklyn, where the biggest category of cases that were declined by prosecutors were drug possession cases. So that made me think, what is going on in the Bronx? Why are victim crimes the most commonly declined crimes or cases in the Bronx, whereas in Manhattan, Brooklyn, that each see more arrests than the Bronx, we see drug possession cases getting the most declined?
Any Bronx residents who were victims of a crime and either did or did not cooperate with the DA's office want to call in? Is this something you're familiar with? How about ADAs? Dare you call in? Anonymously is okay. Assistant district attorneys or defense lawyers who work on criminal cases in the Bronx, 212-433-WNYC. To talk to WNYC's Elsa Chang on her latest investigative report, 212-433-9692. And I want to play a clip of one of the victims you spoke with. Set up who Maxine Scott is, and we'll play this clip.
Sure. Maxine Scott is a mother in the South Bronx, and in 1991, she was with her young daughter, and she got into an argument on the street with another woman. The two of them soon started, you know, exchanging heated words, and Maxine said that the woman took what looked like a razor blade out of her mouth and started swinging at Maxine. She was cut up all over her face, her chest. If you look at her face in person, the scars are so vivid still, even years later. And she decided not to talk to prosecutors, even though the police interviewed her. They were saying, let's go and get this done. But Maxine knew that her daughter was there and the woman saw who her daughter was and felt, if I press charges, if I get the prosecutors to, you know, follow this case, I'm going to endanger my daughter. So she, for years, never said anything.
My daughter was with me when they cut me, so they know what she looks like. So in the back of my head, they're going to retaliate. They're going to do something to her. And that's my only child. You know, that I carried her for 9 months. That's my life. Anything happens to her, I would never forgive myself.
So that's an incredible story, and it's heartbreaking. But what you're really saying is it's not an extreme story that many victims are not coming forward in the first 24 hours for one reason or another. Is it frequently for fear of retaliation?
That's a huge reason. Other reasons that victims' rights advocates have and defense lawyers and prosecutors have talked to me about, sometimes the victim just can't be located, or sometimes the victim is badly hurt and actually can't come forward physically or, you know, answer the phone during those first 24 hours. Or sometimes the victim has language barriers and just doesn't, you know, feel comfortable talking right then and there in the moment.
But is this the DA's fault if they don't prosecute a crime because the victim is not willing to cooperate for fear of retaliation or for whatever reason?
It's not the DA's fault, but the question that this investigation presents is, should the DA be closing the door on the case after only 24 hours if the DA cannot find the victim, or the victim at that during those 24 hours says, I don't want to talk? Is that enough time to truly vet a victim's willingness to cooperate? A lot of people say that's not enough time because there are so many reasons in the immediate time frame that victims don't come forward. And if you shut the door on those cases, you are dropping cases prematurely, too many of them, too quickly. If I could just, you know, it's been so interesting, the pushback and discussions that this investigation has presented. I want to make something very clear, and that is, it is true. It is a prosecutor's duty to only proceed with cases when that prosecutor really believes there's enough evidence to prove the person is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. But then the question is, at what point during a prosecution should a prosecutor feel that level of confidence? Must the prosecutor feel he has all the evidence available at his fingertips within those first 24 hours? Or should prosecutors deserve more time, whether it be days, weeks, or months, to gather more evidence, talk to more witnesses, try to find the victim before that prosecutor thinks, ah, this case should be dropped? And that is the biggest question that this investigation is trying to explore.
But why would there be such a disparity between the Bronx DA, Robert Johnson, and the DAs in all the other counties?
Well, because Robert Johnson has this internal policy saying, let's drop the case if the victim cannot be interviewed by us within 24 hours.
But why does he have that policy?
Well, they defend it by saying it just makes for better cases, because when the victims come forward that early, it means we've got a strong case. Dallas Alonzo, the chief assistant district attorney, says all our ducks are lined up at that point. However, they also say, you know what? If you look at our high DP rate, it's made up for by our low dismissal rate. They say that their soaring decline to prosecute rate all kind of evens out at the end because fewer cases are dismissed later on. But according to the state data, that's just not true. The State Division of Criminal Justice Services, at least for 2011, shows that the Bronx actually has the second highest dismissal rate among all five boroughs. So the numbers don't bear out the way the Bronx DA is trying to say that they bear out.
And we put in an interview request for DA Robert Johnson so he could respond in person to your report. We have not gotten a response, but his chief assistant, Odalis Alonzo, did talk to you. You just referred to her.
Right.
Here is part of what she had to say with respect to what you were just describing.
Our office has had for a very long time this policy, if you want to call it, that our victims have to come forward early.
And she says, you know, not only for all the reasons I just said, that it builds stronger cases, but she says that when the victims come forward early, it builds a better relationship with the victims. They're informed about the case. They're told about what to expect. Well, that makes sense for the victims who come forward. But for all the victims they never talk to, there is no relationship between the DA's office and those victims. And so that's what a lot of law enforcement experts, cops, other people I talk to, other prosecutors say is the problem, is maybe you're giving up on victims too quickly in the Bronx.
Does the low conviction rate that they have in the Bronx indicate perhaps that it's just harder there to get convictions against defendants in assault and other kinds of violent crimes, and therefore they have to be more choosy about which ones they go after, because otherwise they're going to have a lot more cases that are a lot more slapdash and lose even more of them?
That's a theory a lot of people have. But I asked Odalis Alonzo, is your low jury conviction rate at all a factor that enters prosecutors' minds in the complaint room where cases first come in when they're trying to decide which cases to pick, which cases to go forward with? She says, absolutely not. And just a note about the Bronx jury conviction rate, it has been long documented that they have this very low conviction rate in the Bronx. It's called the Bronx jury effect. In civil cases, the juries in the Bronx are known for granting very high damages awards. And in criminal cases, they're known for granting lots of acquittals. So it may be a little unfair to blame, the DA's office is responsible for, you know, low jury conviction rates, because there's, you know,
they're suspicious of the police and the state.
Yes, there's deep distrust of law enforcement. A lot of people have had negative experiences with the police. And police officers I've talked to who've been on the stand during trials in the Bronx say they feel like, you know, the jury's looking at them, distrusting them, just, you know, or sometimes not even trying to make eye contact with them because the jurors feel so uncomfortable with the presence of a police officer sitting right there in the stand. So it's, you know, it's a different feel in that trial courtroom.
Let's take a call. Bud in Manhattan, a former Bronx ADA. Bud, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you. I was a former assistant there many, many, many years ago, way prior to this policy. In fact, I was there so long ago, I was an assistant with when Rob Johnson was an assistant.
Uh-huh.
So we're talking late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
But my point is, I think conspicuously absent from Ms. Chang's report is any horror story from a person who says to the effect, well, I went to the DA's office 48 hours later or 72 hours later. I couldn't make it in the 24 hours, and I wanted to press my charges, but I was turned away. And unless you can come up with some significant, even if it's anecdotal evidence or stories like that, what is the point? What are you complaining about?
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have evidence that people were actually turned away if they wanted to press charges on their crime after 24 hours?
I think that is a great point and a very fair point. Do I have individual stories? I tried my hardest to find those victims. And no, I couldn't find a victim. Says I came back a day later and they said they couldn't take the case because they already dropped it. But it is a fact that if a case is declined, this is just sort of a tutorial on the law. If a case is declined by prosecutors, the arrest record is expunged. And if the victim does later on want to go through cooperating with law enforcement, there would have to be a fresh complaint made with the police, and the police would have to find the defendant and arrest him one more time. What I hear is a lot of victims, they don't come back to do that process all over again. So it's sort of like the chicken or egg question. I mean, like, no, I couldn't find those victims, but that's because a lot of victims don't end up changing their minds once a case is dropped. Yes, absolutely, I would like to find those victims. And if there are victims out there listening to this show today who would like to express their experience, that kind of experience, I urge you to call in because I'm very interested in learning about that.
212-433-WNYC is that number, 212-433-9692.
But I also just want, as a follow-up point to that, it is conceivable that you can bring a prosecution even if you don't have a victim. Brooklyn prosecutors do it. Queens prosecutors do it. Manhattan prosecutors do it. There are what's called evidence-based prosecutions where you bring a case even if you don't have a willing victim to testify, if there's other corroborating evidence. And the question is, does the Bronx do that enough? They do that, they tell me, in certain situations. But the question is, do they do that enough? And if they don't do that enough, then yes, there are crimes going unprosecuted in the Bronx that perhaps could have been prosecuted.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's also a fundamental notion of the American justice system that the district attorneys have a mandate to prosecute crimes regardless of whether the victims want them to. In other words, the DAs represent the state, and a crime is considered a crime against the entire community, not just against the individual.
That is absolutely correct. In fact, exactly as you put it, prosecutors represent the state, not the victim. And so there are people out there who say if you let the victim decide whether a case proceeds, you're basically, as a prosecutor, abdicating your authority to the whim of the victim. Eugene O'Donnell, a criminal justice professor who was both a former prosecutor and a former cop who was in both parts of this story, you know, made that very exact point. And that is, it's the prosecutor to decide whether a case should go forward. It should not be the victim's ultimate decision.
James in Manhattan, you're on WNY. I see. Hello.
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Okay.
I'm a former resident of the Bronx. I grew up there. I'm 60 years old now. And myself, my family, community I lived in, we basically fled the Bronx because of crime. And it's very sad to hear that 60 years later, crime is still such a big issue in the Bronx, even though, you know, nationally and in the city, you know, crime has been dealt with. And it relates, actually, interestingly, to the other story you had yesterday about Westchester and trying to integrate low-income people forcibly into Westchester communities.
And I will just say that we have the Westchester County Executive later in the show today, Rob Astorino, to respond to that federal HUD official. But go ahead.
Yeah, and some of what I say may be supportive of his position. The fact is, much of the Westchester community of people who fled the Bronx, and they fled precisely this situation. And when your guest, Lisa Chang, says that the jurors in the Bronx are suspicious of the police and not all that receptive to hearing them out, I mean that just feeds this dynamic of crime and crime that goes unprosecuted and unrelenting.
Jim.
And it makes it very difficult to want to live there or with those kind of people.
James, thank you very much. And I want to go now to somebody who may say that he was assaulted in the Bronx and that nobody would take his complaint. Paul in Queens. Paul, thank you for calling in. Paul, you there? Hello, Paul. Is it Paul? Okay, we'll see if we can get that connection with Paul. Did you want to respond to that last caller?
I think that is a great point. And that is really the meta issue around this entire investigation that we did here at WNYC. And that is this. Is it wise to have a policy in a district attorney's office that expects victims to come forward right away if you're working in a community that is prone not to talk to law enforcement? The Bronx, as I detailed in today's story, is an interesting borough. I mean, 90% of the borough is Black and Latino. It contains the poorest congressional district in the country. It has a huge immigrant population, which leads to issues like language barriers, like the possibility that undocumented immigrants may feel they can't come forward as victims because they don't want to out themselves as undocumented immigrants. So because of all these factors, there is a deep distrust of authority or law enforcement in the Bronx, in many pockets of the Bronx. And if you're working in a community like that, a community that doesn't want to come forward right away, doesn't want to talk, isn't eager to communicate with law enforcement, does it further the interest of criminal justice to have a policy expecting people to come right away and cooperate?
I think we have Paul in Queens back on with us now. Let's see if we can get his line up this time. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, this is Paul from Queens.
Thanks for calling. What happened to you in the Bronx?
Well, listen, look, I suffered an ethnic crime. You see, when I lived in the Bronx in the predominantly Black area, I'm half Jewish and like I'm very Celtic. They used to call me Baby Beluga. And I
Paul, I need to stay on the
off my wig and I would go and complain. I think it was a hate-based crime.
So you complained and that there was a hate crime against you and they didn't take you seriously?
Yes, because I wore a toupee and I was heavy, I'm quite pale. They would call me Baby Beluga and take off my wig. And I would say, listen, I know it's not a big deal, officers, and they wouldn't take me serious. And right. I went to the DA's office. And it was very embarrassing for me. I was traumatized. Baby Beluga. And then they would take my wig, yank my wig off.
Right. Well, of course, I don't know about your individual case, but I'm sure there is discrimination on the basis of how people look sometimes and whether people can get taken seriously or not. That's people have to parse that out. On the meta issue, you use that term. Mm-hmm. It seems this is a far bigger problem, Elsa, than just the DA's office, right? Mm-hmm. If victims don't trust the system, crimes occur, victims never call the cops, then maybe even take matters into their own hands. You report on that, too. And the DA never hears about that. If the DA prosecuted more cases, would it curb that impulse on the part of victims or increase trust of law enforcement in the community? Or would they just be even more resentful of the system, like they're resentful of cops for coming down on stop and frisk?
That's a really great question, and that is a discussion the entire criminal justice community should have. Prosecutors, defense lawyers, criminal justice advocates, residents. Because we're trying to like compare two hypotheticals, right? Like if the Bronx just doesn't prosecute anything, will people be engaging even more crime? Or if the Bronx prosecutes too much, will people retaliate against the snitchers and then will crime escalate in that way? It's really difficult to tell which way we're better off. But there is one thing that's very certain, and that is residents in the Bronx feel very, at least the ones I talk to, feel very disengaged, very disenfranchised, and very disempowered. They don't feel that they can trust law enforcement to take care of crime and then ultimately to protect them. And if there are ways to reach out to the community and figure out, like, well, maybe we just need to give the victim more time. We need to basically nurture these cases for a little longer, give the victim a little more leeway to waffle and have police officers visit her over and over again if that's possible, and try to persuade her, then maybe that should happen more in the Bronx.
And we're just about out of time. We have the chairman of the New York City Housing Authority standing by as our next guest. But how do the police feel about this DA's policy? It must be very frustrating for them, and something that in a way ties together a lot of the low-income resident interests of the Bronx and the police officers.
Absolutely.
Who must both feel that they cannot get a conviction.
That was another meta issue, if you will, in this entire investigation. The extreme tension between the NYPD and Bronx prosecutors, at least the police officers I talked to and the ADAs I talked to and former ADAs
and
I talked to.
And you're traditionally, in most places, cops and DAs work hand in hand.
Exactly. But in the Bronx, I feel like there's a different kind of tension. The whole reason this story came to me was actually angry cops coming to me saying, something is going on in the Bronx. I make arrests there. I've been a cop in Brooklyn and in Manhattan, but the arrests I make in the Bronx that I know would have been prosecuted in Manhattan or Brooklyn are getting dropped in the Bronx. So I went ahead and looked up the state data, and sure enough, that's when I found that the Bronx has this soaring decline to prosecute rate when you compare it to Brooklyn and Manhattan. And then when I went to former ADAs in the Bronx to ask them, why is the DP rate so high? The first reason every single former ADA in the Bronx gave me is, well, police work in the Bronx is just sloppy. Police are more aggressive. Police are more unlawful in the Bronx. But then I thought, are they almost four times as unlawful as they are in Manhattan and Brooklyn? That didn't make sense. That didn't seem like a sufficient reason either. And it was through more and more interviews that I discovered this victim policy. Okay. And if I just continue, internal office data shows that about half of all the cases that the Bronx DA has declined, at least in the last quarter of the year, were declined because the victim refused to cooperate. So this victim policy does seem to be playing a significant role in getting cases declined.
WNYC's Elsa Chang. You can hear her full investigative report at WNYC.org. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, the New York City Housing Authority Chairman John Rhea responds to the Daily News investigations into lack of security and hundreds of thousands of backlogged repairs. Stay with us.